Blog Talk Radio.
Come shine your light, open your heart, show us your gift that sets you apart. When you believe, then you can see that you are the star of your own destiny.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. Today is October 5th. I cannot believe how this year is flying by. It's just way too fast, but so exciting all at the same time. Wanted to let you know of a couple of things that we have coming up. On October 19th, we are going to be having Don Jose Ruiz on here talking about the book that he co-authored with his father, Don Miguel Ruiz, The Fifth Agreement. So we hope that you will join us on that day as well. And then in November, on November 2nd, we start with Marianne Wielden. She's going to be talking to us about cultivating your magnificence. She's a really sweet lady. I've had a couple conversations with her, and I think that her work is very powerful, and you're really going to enjoy having her on here. For those of you who go to my website, The Honoring Hour, www.thehonoringhour.com, I want to let you know I have not abandoned that site. If you've been listening to any of the past shows for the past month and a half, you know that I had a little incident where lightning struck and affected my computer, and it's just a big switch over to get everything up and running. So instead of kind of rocking the boat with that bit by bit, I'm in process of redoing the whole thing, and I'll be getting that up. So I haven't abandoned that. Just kind of hang in there, if you will, and that will be updated completely very soon. I didn't let the ball drop on that. I am working on it behind the scenes. So I'm really glad to have everybody joining us today because we have a fantastic guest on the show. I love it when somebody contacts me spontaneously and says, hey, I know this great person. Would you please check them out? And that's how I found our guest today, Stephen Victor. Stephen works as a consultant, a teacher, and a writer in the fields of compassion and human possibility. And when I read that about him and looked at his website, which is www.stephenvictor.com, I just love the idea behind what I was reading that he did because I think it embodies what I'm looking to personify here on the show. And that, to me, is people stepping into the authenticity of who they are on a spiritual level and living that in this day-to-day life. So I'd like to welcome to the show Stephen Victor. How are you, Stephen?
I'm well, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. I'm glad to have you. Now, Stephen, you have a pretty varied background. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, I certainly can. I was thinking where my growth or awakening starts, and I grew up in small rural middle America, I think as ignorant as one can be, and late in high school I looked around my world and in this small community and thought, this doesn't fit for me, where can I go? And my family hadn't talked about education, and so I went into the Navy wholly oblivious to the dynamics in Vietnam and what that was all about, and went through that process, and then returned and started in the university and worked as a cop and for quite a number of years, and found my way into personal growth for myself and then training it and working in organizations as a I thought as a mediator of conflict, but what I later learned as mediating love, and then into public arenas, doing workshops and trainings and seminars, as well as business consulting.
Wow. Well, so that's a change. Isn't it interesting when you find yourself in a place where the world around you isn't making sense? I had that actually happen to me when I was really young. It was in a religious setting, and it just didn't make sense. And you do start looking for something that's different, and you definitely picked an interesting way to get out of that and learn something going into the service. So congratulations on you coming out on top of everything.
Well, so. That's very kind, and And I think that for many of us, we find a path or are peripherally guided on a path that is worthy of our trust and our faith, that in the same way other animals on the planet or vegetation on the planet trusts life, that the course we each follow is deserving of a fidelity and a trust and a relaxing into that. And it's a kind of a, I think, a difficult grace at times to constantly bump up against things that eventually direct one's movement into an awakening or an unfolding. And I think that in myself, I think I have resisted anything that came my way, whether it was good for me or not. And the origins of that are really unimportant. And yet, the path is here in our lives if we but consent to it.
Right. I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. I'm going to take just a second and open up the line and introduce Michelle is here to co-host with us today. How are you doing, Michelle?
Oh, I'm doing good now that I can get in.
Right, yeah, I know. She just texted me and said, I'm having some technical trouble. But Michelle is here to co-host with us today because she was gracious enough to step up. I thought there might be a conflict, an emergency conflict, where I wouldn't be able to be on the show. And she was excited after exploring Stephen's website and wanted to join us and be here. So thank you for doing that, Michelle.
Oh, no, I really appreciate the opportunity. This is really exciting work, and I'm looking forward to learning more about it.
Great.
Oh, wonderful.
Stephen, you were just saying, the way that I was hearing what you were just saying is that, you know, we have to honor every bit of our step, that, you know, some of those things that we're bumping up against and where we're feeling resistance is still part of the path that we're traveling, and we have to honor that. Is that an accurate interpretation of what you just said, you know, or one accurate interpretation?
Yeah, that's articulated well. And what I'm, for myself, another way to describe or flesh that out a little bit is the process of falling in love with oneself involves letting go of for me, what I'd say the fight or the resistance, and simply acknowledging and consenting to, yes, this circumstance is in my life, this circumstance is in my life, this circumstance is in my life. And rather than assessing it or evaluating it, initially simply saying, yes, this is in my life. Now what do I want to do? Yes, this is in my life. I lost the thread. Speak again, and I'll pick something up.
Well, you were saying about acknowledging things, and I couldn't help but thinking, I'm actually working with a family right now that's just in a really they're in a generational situation where life is just very challenging for them. And you know what I'm hearing you say is that one of their issues is that they're very impoverished, and this is just one of numerous things that are going on with them. So to recognize that, yes, you know, we are, you know, we at this point we are very indigent, you know, we do have scarce resources, but just acknowledging that situation where they are and then beginning to love themselves irregardless of, you know, of where they are. And the only reason I bring it up from that perspective is because one of the members of the family is acutely aware that they don't have resources, and it's a challenge for that person. They want to have other resources, yet they're in a very, very rural area of the community, and they don't have transportation, and there's no public transportation. So they're kind of caught in a catch-22, and that is one of the things that I've been trying to work with them on, is just realizing, look at what you do have. Because when I walk in there, I'm seeing a lot of really, you know, the willingness to shift and to grow and make your situation different when it's not happy for you, to me, is just such a huge step. So when you're talking about acknowledging that, is that accurate that they just have to start loving where they are and what they have? Is that where you start with people?
Well, you know, this is not as this is a paradox, because in one respect it is as simple as what I just said, and yet in another sense it's much more complex, and there are more pieces involved. And I want to, if I'm remembering right, I want to think it was Rilke or Goethe who said, poets who said that when there's chaos, essentially turn to one thing in nature. And so one of the ways to begin is to look at, no matter what struggles are going on, look at my life and look at the nature I'm in, whether it's the trees around me or the vegetation or the flowers or the falling leaves, and what do I find heartening? If I were to separate myself from my troubles for a moment and get in touch with, maybe it's a cool breeze on a hot day, maybe it's a nice breeze in fall, what is it that I'm drawn to or that I like in living nature? And open myself and let that touch my heart. And in that sense, there's a beginning to remember again our place, and that there is beauty in life irrespective of the current circumstances, no matter how dire they are. And that actually can require a great deal to shift one's attention. And that has to do with, in one respect, stories that people live by or that they've told themselves. We all have a narrative about how things are in the world. And as you know, it's either a narrative that the world is safe and friendly, or it's other than that. And that opening to nature, and I don't mean the hurricanes necessarily, but or the new growth after a hurricane perhaps, but open to beauty and to spend time with thinking about that will begin an unfolding. So it is acknowledging and consenting to what is, but it's not only consenting to the difficult circumstances, but consenting to the beauty that's here.
Okay. And you do that through what you're encouraging people to do, it sounds like, is to find that in nature. And the reason I bring that up like that is because when I was in college, I actually had a teacher, an instructor, who we were on a topic, and I made the comment, I just don't understand how people couldn't, you know, when things are just really bad, I just don't understand if they went outside and just sat down by a tree for a second and just took a minute, why, you know, that couldn't help them shift. And that instructor said to me, there are some people that do not relate to nature and the outside. And I personally, even to this day, have a hard time with that concept, not because I don't believe that it's not so. I think that it absolutely, I do believe that there are people that walk their own path. But for me, it's just such a foreign concept that they couldn't appreciate, you know, just a beautiful day or, you know, funny-looking clouds or, you know, just some, you know, a bird that flies by. But, you know, I guess to each his own. But you're saying you do take that avenue. You do, like, appreciate the beauty of things around you that are here naturally on the planet. Is that what you're saying?
I didn't do it with any degree of consciousness when I was a child. I mean, I was outside and climbing trees and all outside from early to late and had a particular affinity with it, but I didn't have a consciousness about it. I wasn't aware that it was relevant in my life. And it was actually years later and many years after being a consultant and teacher in personal growth of driving one morning early through a valley to a consultancy job a couple hours away that I watched the sunrise while the moon was still full and started weeping. And those types of openings, in a sense, they're not directed by our local self, that our awakening out of the morass of our lives is largely dependent on something beyond our personality. And there are essentially two types of people on the planet, those who are awakening and those who will awaken. And so on one hand, it's extraordinarily simple, and yet if we live in very painful circumstances that garner and gather our attention, sometimes it's a huge effort to shift our attention from our struggles to something that is life-affirming.
Right. We have someone in the chat room that says, I'm here because I'm under hardships. It's been going on for a while. It helped me to grow spiritually and recently more aware, but I also feel like my life is in a limbo. Do you have any comments or anything to offer that person?
Yeah, I have, and I'm going to start kind of in a very abstract and then bring it down very close and personal to this issue. And if you've seen my website, you see that I work in energetic fields of grace and wisdom. In other words, parts of universal intelligence. Our lives are exist within fields of energy that are larger parts of ourselves and then larger parts of our cosmos. And the fields of energy are simply waiting for us to involve ourselves with them, and they will assist. There was a time when I was working in those fields, and I was working with a particular family, and the husband of this in the family had been involved in the war. And when a family member is involved in the war, the energetic field of the war interpenetrates the family field and stops the movement of love. And then people have more difficulties. When I was doing that work, the field communicated a message in that all war is grace. And it took me about 12 or 18 months until I fully apprehended and understood that the universe and everything in it is love, and sometimes that love is very fierce or difficult. And when there's a war, whether it's a literal war between nations or people, or one is conflicted with oneself, in other words, I feel stuck in my life or things aren't moving, if I am impatient with that or struggling with that, I'm at war. And yet that very war is a form of grace that invites us to open to a compassion or a beauty or a joy or a self-love and love of circumstance, whether I like them or not. And when I move into that place of simply consenting to this is what's going on in my life allowing my body to be at ease, there's the beginning of an end to that dynamic.
You know, one thing I found really interesting, and I love the way that you put that, one thing, you know, in the work that I do is kind of help people realize that once you've defined a goal and you know where you're going and you're implementing the habit changes or the behavior changes to move towards that, whether physically, cognitively, whatever, there is a state of anxiety as you shift from navigating what is known to navigating what it is you want to see in your life. And recognizing, you know, having that clarity of thought and recognizing I am moving towards, you know, what I wish to see in my life, but it's new. And really embracing that sense of anxiety or, you know, walking through that fear, knowing that this is just about change, not about danger, because I am clear on what I'm thinking. Does that kind of relate to what you're kind
Absolutely.
Of...
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely see that. It's such an amazing grace, you know, just those baby steps, that those small steps towards once you see, there's so much wisdom in that, you know. With each step, you're learning how to not only attain what it is you want to see in your life, but actually maintain it once you get there and move forward.
Yes, and in the process of wanting to move forward and being frightened, to be very gentle and gracious with oneself and avoid the criticism. Often what happens is if I'm feeling frightened and I want to move ahead, I can be judgmental or critical of myself for not being able to more easily make the shift. And the imperative is to be very gentle and gracious and non-critical. Be very self-compassionate. And yet, as you turn your attention to what you want to, how you want it to be.
Yeah. Oh, I love the way you put that.
So, Stephen, how do you work with people to get them to move into a place of self-compassion?
Well, my reluctance is to say is that it's taken me years to move there myself, in that having thought that I was there and then really realized that I haven't been. So I can tell you how some of my work occurs, and that there's the openings to self-compassion. There are several forms my work takes, but a dominant form is referred to as constellation work. It is a type of work that had its roots in Germany 25 years ago. It's a way of working with people and families or business organizations to work with the human systems and the energetic aspects of what goes on in a circumstance. And quite often when someone is upset with themselves or not as loving or compassionate or having difficulties, the issues are not their own. Someone is carrying an issue for either their parents or one of the ancestors. And traditional psychotherapeutic approaches don't work because they work at the level of personality. And this particular constellation work works in the broader energetic fields of an individual or a family or a company. And it seems to be that there are fields of energy that inform and send information to different family members or different people. And this method allows to identify where the issue came from and how to give it back or resolve it so one feels more ease, more strength, more flow of love. And when one begins to feel that, the only way to get the relief is to open your heart and to have a sense of compassionate acknowledgement of these circumstances. And when people watch this process, there's literally no way that they can't feel this change. So that there's a feeling that's undeniable, even though it's, you can't defend it intellectually. There's something here about opening up to love and compassion.
It, you know, this may sound like it's changing topic, but I personally feel like it blends right in. You know, it sounds like, you know, before we can really do any of this, we have to be willing to take responsibility for ourselves. To me, that's what, you know, when, you know, if I were to look around and say, oh, you know, I've got a situation in my life that I don't like, you know, part of being able to accept that and love it is to take, you know, to take responsibility. Okay, I've created this.
Absolutely.
You know, and so that self-responsibility. And I find that that's really, like, so many things, so many of the shows and so much of the work that, you know, I do with other people, it really comes down to that just being a fundamental part of a divine shift is personal responsibility, just taking, owning what's yours and letting other people own what's theirs.
Yeah, even if a person is not yet able to acknowledge that they've created it, but to be accountable and take responsibility of saying, oh, this is my life, this event and circumstance is in my life, and I'm the one who has to do something about it, or I'm the only one who can do something about it. And so this is what I want to do. I want to address this. This is what is, and it's my responsibility to do something about it. You're spot on. That's an imperative.
Do you find that sometimes the action that they have to take is to acknowledge that it's not their stuff and they need to let the person whose stuff it is deal with it?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. We all have a propensity to take on other people's issues all the time.
Right.
And it's a great way to distract from being responsible with one's own life.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting that. You know, let me fix you so I don't have to focus on fixing what it is my life.
Exactly. or we'll talk about some other marriage rather than addressing the issues in my own marriage.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
We have someone in the chat room that made the comment, when someone makes me angry, I feel like I created it. Do you have any comments about that?
Well, one kind of general one, if it's a woman, oftentimes women feel responsible for creating issues when they really haven't. Men do that, but they do that less often. So in the first case, I would simply say step back and take a look at the dynamics, see yourself and this other person from the position of being a neutral camera observing, and let yourself get clear whether you in fact created it or not. And if you did, acknowledge it. If you didn't, leave it with the other and don't take it on and just say, well, I'm in this circumstance. I didn't create this and I'm here. Now how do I proceed?
Now, anger is, you know, can be perceived, and is, you know, a lot of the clients that I work with, I do some community work with families that, you know, they have learned that anger is a bad thing, or they mishandle anger. It's the only emotion that they know how to express. So I find that, you know, people get confused about healthy anger, because sometimes anger can be healthy. I mean, it's a natural emotion, and sometimes it is the first step to releasing things. Do you ever run across people that, you know, really need to be told it's okay to be angry sometimes?
Well, of course. And if I may, I'll speak a little more about anger.
Oh, yes.
There's misunderstandings about anger, and yet there are different types of anger. That when a child is angry and there's been loss, often what the reality is the child does not know how, nor is it safe for the child to grieve. So a child expresses anger in an attempt to grieve. And if people do not learn how to grieve, which almost no one does in our modern world, then oftentimes anger is an attempt at expression and clearing of grief, but it doesn't work. There's anger that comes to the people who can handle it, that's pure strength to motivate and assist in taking action. That's what you're speaking to. That's a very good, healthy anger. There's also anger that is really indignant and self-righteous. When there's an indignant or self-righteous anger, one thing is for certain, that anger does not belong to that person. They are carrying it for someone who's come before them, or perhaps clients. I used to work sometimes with district attorneys and social workers, and a lot of times these people are really angry, but they're self-righteous in their anger. And what they're doing is they're carrying the anger and the pain for their clients. And that's a very unhealthy kind of anger. And then there are a couple other types of anger. So anger is important, and yet it needs to be understood, and some of it needs to be cleared in specific ways. There needs to be room for it, and then it just simply needs to be properly channeled. You know, the story about my boss said this to me, so I came home and I kicked my dog. And there are other ways to deal with that.
So when you're talking about moving from fear to self-compassion and sovereignty, and you've got someone that's really stuck in that anger, and I might have just missed, it might have just like not sunk in the way that it was said, how do you, if you're working with them, how are you taking them from that place of anger into that self-compassion state, into that opening?
Well, that mostly nowadays when I do that, I use the method that I referred to earlier as constellation work, the family members, I'll have different people in my groups stand in and represent, say, a mother and a father and the child, and say that the child, what I mean by a child, it can be a grown man or woman, and have their parents there. And take, for example, a man who is really angry and in a really indignant way. And I'll have my client who I'm working with sitting next to me or sitting in the room watching this process where the energetic field of his circumstance is informing these other people. And what shows up very clearly is that there's a dynamic between perhaps the son and his father or a grandfather, that there was some event in the past that had gone unacknowledged by a parent or grandparent. And when that is acknowledged, when the circumstance is acknowledged in the process, and the angry man sitting next to me can watch, will see and literally feel that this is not his own, that this anger really belongs to someone else. And then either through specific healing movements or healing statements, that the anger is given back to the earlier generation. And when that occurs, the younger person feels free, and also the one for whom it's right to carry the anger experiences relief. Because no parent or grandparent wants to encumber their children with their own issues. And when these find their way back to where they belong, everyone is relieved. And this is a particularly hard process to really understand unless you experience it. Because as a people, we're not used to thinking that there are unseen energetic dynamics that are affecting us. So I'm not sure I can articulate this in a way that's really clear. I guess what I want to say is it doesn't simply come from thought. The change doesn't occur in thought. It comes from really a feeling in one's heart. And to have this release occur, it simply involves the opening of one's heart. And sometimes that's a very challenging thing to do, is to open one's heart, particularly at somebody you feel angry with. And yet it's simply a consenting and having the courage and the self-compassion to open your heart. And it can feel incredibly dangerous. Mm-hmm. And yet it's perfectly safe.
You know, when you talk about that, I'm thinking about some statements you made earlier about, you know, how we move towards change, having that self-compassion. And, you know, and then in this instance, you're stating how, you know, coming from that place of self-compassion and moving that into this angry situation. And they really just are connected, you know, the way we judge and are so punitive towards ourselves really moves from that, you know, position of being, really moves into our relationships. And in shifting that, what I'm hearing you're saying is in shifting that and having that self-compassion, you can come from that place and move into your relationships, and that really brings in that component of grace that you've been speaking about. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think you're right on. I think there's an imperative, and in other words, just a necessity now for us each to stop our self-criticism, our self-judgment, our self-condemnation, that and to open to believe that we are something entirely and wholly other than what we think we are. And one way to start is to start with an awareness that I am neither my past nor my behavior. I may not know who I am, but I know that I'm distinct from my personal history, and I'm distinct from my behavior. And that is something that is lovable. It's simply life. And all life is lovable. And then there's another thing to remember here, in that life cannot hate life. We can hate circumstances, we can hate events, but we cannot hate life. And a lot of people feel contempt toward self or other, but what they really have contempt for or loathe or hate is circumstance. And so to move into a place of knowing that it's impossible to hate another human being, it's impossible to hate any form of life, and that any condemnation or criticism is of behavior, which is entirely distinct from the person, him or herself.
Yeah, that is such a fundamental distinction. You know, we have, you know, humans, we have learned to really associate culturally, to associate situations with, you know, that external representation of, oh, this is who was present, so this is, you know, what I can blame, or these are the circumstances that I am, and really delineating that association. Like you said, this is a behavior, this is a circumstance, but fundamentally, you know, life is good, people are good. And, you know, that kind of goes in. I noticed you do a lot of work with conflict resolution and coming from that place of that deep understanding that, you know, there is a way to work this out when we step into that peaceful heart, rather than focusing on the situation as encompassing the wholeness of who we are.
Yes, and sometimes the process of resolving conflict is not a peaceful process. It's done in a way that where it's free of blame and judgment and criticism, because the way to resolve conflict is to deal with the truth of perceptions rather than facts, and to deal with my own perceptions and my own experience rather than talk about the other person. And so when there's a way to get through conflict, it's having the courage to be honest enough with oneself and state aloud my thoughts, my feelings, and my wants in context vis-a-vis this other person. And it's only after what I've had to say has been acknowledged and received, and vice versa, can often do the hearts don't open until then. And mm-hmm. And every time after a successful resolution, that love is palpable in the room. That's when I learned that I wasn't mediating conflict, I was mediating love by simply removing the impediments to the love. So sometimes it's a difficult grace to get to an open heart, and you don't know it until you're there. You just trust that you need to go through this process of being really, really honest with oneself and mm-hmm. in a non-judgmental, non-blaming way of self or other.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Well, you know, and I noticed, too, on your website that you really take a lot of your work to several different cultures and countries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just very curious is how, you know, with these different cultures, different belief systems, do you find there's specific challenges, or are you finding that really outside of all of the external differences that this message just rings clear no matter where you go?
Well, you know, it's in Europe there are certainly cultural differences, and yet, in a sense, they're shallow. When moving into the Middle East, there's a greater depth to the differences, and yet, when we go beneath, when we acknowledge the differences and are not critical of them, there we can easily move into the human system part of us, the human heart, to the non-psychological, non-personality based aspects of ourselves. And in that respect, I would say we're all the same, in that we all want to love and be loved, and that we want to have certain experiences in our lives. We want to creatively express, and we want to take care of ourselves and our families. And there's an honesty that we recognize, and we also, at all of us, recognize, you know, the deeper structures of life in the universe. Even though our personalities and our belief systems may lock us so tightly into rigid perspectives that are wholly distinct from our life. And it, what it brings about is that even though there is the light of the universe in every religion and the light of the universe in every culture, our cultures and our religions are rarely, if at all, life-sustaining, life-affirming. They are overlaid so much with political agendas of that support certain people at the expense of others. And yet at the center of all culture is something life-affirming. At the center of all religions is something life-affirming. But rarely does anyone get in touch with that. And so there's the real imperative now is to get in touch with one's own heart. There was a Walt Whitman, there was a line from Walt Whitman years ago that soon there will be no more priests. Their time is done. Everyone is to become his or her own priest. And what the poet is meaning by that is it's time for us to connect directly with the divine beauty and dignity of life and connect with it through our own heart and let that guide us. And for each of us to do that, and we do, life will work more easily for us. Quite a distance from your original question. Sorry.
No, but I love the progression of the discussion because it really goes into, I mean, so many people are talking, you know, in you know, Western culture and across the world, there's such a shift on economics going right now. A lot of the foundations that people put a lot of faith into are falling away or being proven false. And so much of this learning is coming, you know, to bear this truth that, you know, if and, you know, whenever we look at someone as how do you function and serve me rather than working into that collaborative relationship of all life is you know, intrinsically valid, you know, it just seems like we're really moving away from that whole function of another person into really stepping into the truth of relationships and how you really cannot manipulate or lessen another individual without really lessening life as a whole.
Well stated, absolutely. Beautifully stated. And I don't know whether it was possible in the past for humans to work cooperatively. I think it's an unfolding, evolving process, and I think we're moving toward that immediately. And I also agree that when we injure self or when we injure another, we're only now beginning to appreciate that the consequences are huge and also that they're becoming really, really immediate. I think a lot of the economic institutions, as well as the model itself, were founded on some absences of real solid truths. And anything that's not doesn't have a foundation on a real integrity is crumbling. And that's what we see going on around the world. And for the changes, even though many people think that our old economy will come back and we'll cycle through this, well, I don't think it is going to come back. I think we're going to have to create entirely new systems that are predicated on structural integrities of the universe that are based on love and cooperation and collaboration and supporting the dignity of all of life.
Yeah, and you know, it's wonderful how that, you know, for me personally, when I can see a truth and I can see it in nature, I can see it in circumstance, and then I can see it in the external world, you know, I look at that truth and that energy, you know, you've talked about that personal responsibility, And then that moves into social responsibility and then universal responsibility and really moving from those illusions, from those false foundations into, you know, life-affirming behaviors, you know, integrity across all environments. You know, like you know, earlier you stated about going out and finding something beautiful in nature, and there is an integrity in nature. And, you know, as human beings under, you know, the scientific model since the 19th century, prediction, you know, description, prediction, and then, of course, control, we've moved away from that integrity into a manipulative space. And I agree with you, you know, as human beings, we go from that place of moving from this situation, my life is not working for me, defining something in this future, and then having, you know, moving, like you said, through that fear and using that personal grace to move into the direction of where we want to be. I do see a lot of people wanting that old paradigm of the economics and, you know, the 1980s boom of finances and all that stuff to come back so they can feel comfortable. But, you know, I think, and then tell me if you agree with me, we're kind of in that moving anxiety of moving into something new and really learning how, you know, gently to move through that without judgment into where we really want to see humanity and, you know, kind of a world peace evolve.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I want to take this a step further. Because this also involves being kind and gracious to those who do not yet take responsibility or are having a lot of difficulty. I remember years ago, and this might be an extreme example, but years ago I was involved in arresting a man who shot and killed his stepson. And one of the things I knew, and I don't know how I knew it, but I knew that of course I'm going to involve myself in building a case so this man can be prosecuted and the situation can be adjudicated properly. Yet I also knew that there was an imperative for me to be kind and loving of this guy and take care of him as long as when he was in my custody. And that goes to our world at large. There's an imperative for those of us who want to be accountable and think we're awakening to be kind and loving of people who are not in the same space, even though we may have to have roles or jobs that involve things that will impact the other, but we can be loving of them instead of getting angry or judgmental or critical. There's an imperative to be compassionate with all of life, with everyone, with ourselves and with others, whether they're awakening or being compassionate or not, or whether they're being responsible or not. Does this make sense?
Oh, it really does. And I just want to say that, you know, what that says to me, that whole, it kind of goes back to that simple saying of, you know, if it's right for you, it's right for everyone. You know, genuinely, like heart right, not, you know, vindictively right. And, you know, a really good example, I want to just say thank you to everyone that's been in the chat room. If you've been paying attention to that, we definitely had a controversial situation going on in there. And it's the first time I have to say it's ever happened on the show. So, Stephen, you're definitely, you know, out there making transition. That's what was going through my head, and I was grateful to have Michelle on here navigating the conversation because I was trying to figure out how I got locked out of my own chat room. But it really occurred to me that, you know, this is the type of stuff, like I'm really wanting the show to come out here and to really make an impact, and I will say without a doubt this show will strike, you know, it's doing it. Your work is really powerful. Because it definitely called in, you know, it definitely hits people at a heart level. It makes them a little uncomfortable. You know, I mean, there's people that are awake and they're receiving it, but there are definitely people that are waking up, I think, that need to hear this message. So thank you for going out there and doing your work. But, again, to get back to what you were saying is, you know, when we're doing right, when we're doing genuinely right from a heartfelt perspective, even if it seems like it's going to be hurtful to someone else, it can't be. If it's right for one, it's right for everyone.
Yeah, and yet that's a difficult thing to apprehend. and it's one thing to start to think we comprehend it, but there are people on the planet who for generations and generations and generations and generations and hundreds of generations believe that it's right to do vendetta and blood for blood. And even though that we take that as being something we don't want on the planet, that it's not life-affirming, it's imperative for us to honor and respect the people with their perspective on integrity and still move the whole forward to opening to an alignment with the love that is the universe, the love that emanates from the source of all life. And so there's nothing easy we're talking about. This is a very challenging and complex world we live in, and it's to move to a place of this is what is. Now how do I proceed? Rather than being at odds with everything that's going on. This is how people believe. These are the circumstances. How do I proceed now without resisting or fighting and yet staying faithful to one's own heart in the deepest knowing in that transcends my personality entirely. And so there's a way in which life is inviting us to transition our beliefs and transition our personality and connect with something beyond one's personality or whoever we think we are, and connect with life that is constantly involved in its communicating with us and asking us for something, and to align ourselves with that aspect of life that is entirely distinct from our thoughts and our beliefs. That's the invitation that's here for us, and that's what the rest of life, non-human life on the planet, is entirely connected with.
Yeah,
I know.
Beautiful.
It's a lot, isn't it, to think, to open to?
It is. It definitely is. But the whole process of opening feels, in my opinion, it feels overwhelming initially. And once you start moving through it, I think that there are moments where it's overwhelming. But on the whole, it's just a more... It's an easier ride on the whole. I can't say it's easy all the time, but it's certainly less tiring than fighting it against it all the time.
I will say that I think each of us will have our own experience of it. I think my course is I've made my course particularly difficult. So for people who make their course difficult, It may not always, it may be quite hard, and yet it is, I will agree with you, it is better than the alternative. It's, at least in my world, this expansion and awakening is better than staying contracted and in a lot more pain and suffering.
Right, yeah, and that's the point I was actually trying to make. That was much, articulated much better than what I did. But yeah, it's, for me, whenever I am personally not moving with the flow and not open and not, progressing with, divine wisdom, I just find my life so much more challenging. And physically, like I get a lot of physical symptoms, I will get very exhausted. That's one of my triggers and one of my wake-up calls is like, are you really doing, are you in the flow or are you fighting against it? And I have a lot of physical symptoms. I've learned that that's my stuff. And I know that other people have different experiences. So, yeah, thank you for reframing that in a more articulate manner.
Well, you said that really beautifully, and I too do have had more physical problems than I've wanted. And it is a wake up call, and that's a nice example of how to put a context around the circumstances, how to hold something or how to look at it, instead of the my body is. Making my life miserable. It's my body is getting my attention and wants something from me different than what I've been doing. So
right.
I am in agreement, absolutely.
Yes, definitely. Well, we are getting down to about the last 5 minutes of the show. I wanted to say to everyone, Stephen's website is www.stephenvictor.com. And that's a great way to go on there and look a little bit about what he's doing. His calendar's on there. It's a great way to keep up with him. And, Stephen, is there contact information on there for you as well?
There is. And the StephenVictor.com, I spell Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, V-I-C-T-O-R. So it's Stephen Victor with a P-H. There is contact information there. And I do programs in Oregon currently. I've not worked a lot in the States in the last few years. I've worked more abroad. And I'm also a writer, and I'm getting materials for publication. And so there'll be articles, and there's a book underway that if people want more information. I think I'd just like to say that the first movement is being gentle with oneself, being kind with oneself no matter what's going on, and pausing all the fighting with circumstance and just say, yes, this is happening, I acknowledge this, now what do I do, now how do I move on? But to be gracious with self and consenting to events and circumstances will give a lot more ease.
Great. Well, I want to thank you very much for being on here today, Stephen. As I said at the beginning of the show, you were introduced to me through someone that contacted me by email. So this was the first opportunity for me to really, you know, hear what you had to say and spend any time with you. You know, I've been talking with your admin and just absolutely love her. She was brilliant. And, of course, I was not disappointed. You know, you're wonderful as well. So that's very clear with the people that you have surrounding you, helping. So thank you so much for joining us today. This was great to have you here.
Well, it was my pleasure, and I'm really heartened to be a part of your good work and your assistance that you give your listeners, and I'm just heartened to be a part of it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for joining us. Michelle, thank you so very much for being on here with me today as well. I greatly appreciate that.
Oh, well, like I said earlier, this has been really exciting for me just to be able to come on and learn more about the work that Stephen's doing and, really being honored with the opportunity to come in and assist you. I appreciate that as well. So thank you.
Great. Thanks. So, again, Stephen's website is www.stephenvictor.com. He spells that with a P-H. If you were in the chat room, I'd put that up there earlier, but thank you, Stephen, for reminding me for those people that will be listening to this later. So please do check out his information. You're welcome to join us on the Honoring Hour Facebook page. We're on LinkedIn, and we're on Twitter. We'd love to have you join us there. And please do join us in 2 weeks when we have Don Jose Miguel on here talking about his book, The Fifth Agreement. Thank you all so much for being with us, and we look forward to being with you next time. Have a great week.